Well, she says that in the beginning we were told to put all our problems and issues in the box and forget about them. But some of them keep coming to mind. Well, there's different levels of approach, but generally, when we chant, we have to just let go of all those problems and issues and just focus on the Holy Name. And we have to have faith that the Holy Name will, well, that, yeah, our real business is to take shelter of the Holy Name and develop our relationship with the Holy Name. And that the Holy Name or Krishna can solve any problem better than we can on our own. It can give us a better solution than we can get on our own. So we should have that faith and just let it go. I mean, I assume it's something that can wait until after the retreat. Right? Yeah, so just let it go. Just let it go. Yes.
I have a question. We are asked to do japa in a room, which as suggested that it increases our devotion if we chant in a room. Sometimes it becomes too noisy. You can't focus on your own japa. So my question is it okay if we can chant all by ourselves? And if yes, is it okay if we do that at the beginning of coming into Krishna consciousness? Or are there stages where we can chant by ourselves?
She says we were advised to chant in the group because the effect will be greater in the group. But when there's loud chanting in the group, she can't hear her own japa, so is it all right if she moves the group and chants on her own? Well, there are definite advantages to chanting in the group, but one of the disadvantages is when the sound of the other devotees chanting interferes with your hearing of your own chanting. And in this regards, devotees have used earplugs to keep the sound of the other devotees chanting away, and I think that's a pretty good solution, because there's a good energy from the concerted effort of the devotees to chant with attention. But certainly you want to be able to hear your own mantras. So I think earplugs could help. But it is better, I mean, by and large, it is better to chant in a group. Yes?
Krishna, she was accepting it.
Yes, we heard that Srila Prabhupada said that one meaning of the Maha Mantra is Krishna, please accept me. There's degrees of being accepted. He has already accepted you, otherwise how could you be chanting, how could you be in Varshana, how could you be in the Japa retreat? So he's already accepted you. But there's degrees of being accepted by Krishna. And as we progress, we can pray to be accepted in more intimate service. And how do you know whether you've been accepted? Well, you will know. Like Prabhupada said, if you've eaten a meal and you feel satisfied and nourished, you don't have to ask the waiter, "Am I satisfied?" You yourself will know. So of course you've been accepted. But there's degrees of acceptance. Yes, thank you, for baby. Oh.
Earlier you were mentioning the point of having in the even subtle one taking away the cage.
Well, you know, she said that by committing subtle offenses against devotees, we can lose our taste. And, but, yes, we do distinguish between devotees that we want to come closer to. But in that process, what really determines if we're committing an offense or not is whether we're having offensive thoughts towards the people that we don't want to be close to. I mean, you can decide not to be close to a particular devotee or not to make a special effort to be close to a particular devotee without being offensive. But you could also do it in a way that is offensive. I mean, you could think about it in a way that is offensive. As far as someone having done something that hurt you on a very deep level and being unable to forget it, well, that comes from identifying with the body, because what could they do to hurt you? And even if you think they did hurt you, Krishna is the cause of all causes. So you're seeing them independent of Krishna, but nothing is independent of Krishna, so you can't really blame them.
Servant of the holy name. You said a little bit on the lecture.
Yes. How can we develop the mood of being the servant of the holy name? Well, first we have to understand that we are. That's our constitutional position. Jiva Swarupai Krishna Nityadas, we're the eternal servant of Krishna. Krishna and the holy name are the same, so we are the eternal servant of the holy name. And we serve the holy name by spending time with the holy name, chanting the holy name, hearing the holy name. We serve the holy name by spreading the Sankirtan movement, by engaging others in chanting the holy name, and we serve the holy name by serving the other servants of the holy name and assisting them in their service to the holy name. So there are so many ways in which we can serve the holy name and the other servants of the holy name. Should hear if we our focus should be on hearing the holy name, but if we are reading Srila Prabhupada's books about Krishna, about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, or even books about Srila Prabhupada such as Srila Prabhupada Lamrita, then when we chant without making a separate effort to remember the form, qualities, and pastimes of the Lord and His devotees, we may naturally remember that. But we are not advised to make a separate effort that while we're chanting, we make a separate effort to remember the form and qualities and pastimes. But if we are reading about them, hearing about them, then naturally, if we chant nicely, they may automatically come into our mind without our making a separate endeavor.
Yes.
Maharaj, when we hear about the pastimes of the holy, when we hear about the holy names, we hear about it as a personality, as Nam Prabhu. But actually, my realization is up to the level of it being a transcendental thought vibration. So, having the knowledge of it being a personality, but not having the realization, is actually, forming some sort of obstacle. I mean, unless we realize it, becomes developing that faith. So, how can we develop that faith of it actually being a personality?
He says we may, I'm paraphrasing, we may have theoretical knowledge that the holy name is Krishna, but we may not have the realization. But the realization will come by the endeavor to chant with attention. Krishna will reveal himself as a living person, that the holy name will reveal himself as a living person. You're chanting, you're praying to the holy name, you're trying to develop your relationship with the holy name, and he will reciprocate. But reading about the holy name also helps. Hearing about the holy name helps. discussing about the holy name helps. Those are all favorable. And associating with people who have more faith in the holy name, more taste, that also helps. And pray, pray. I've heard this, I haven't experienced it. But then again, Srila Prabhupada said, in the beginning we chant as a matter of duty. And the other things will follow if we just do our duty.
A devotee cheats another devotee. How long he should be polite and humble to him?
One devotee cheats another devotee, so how long should he be polite and humble? Well, it's a very specific type of question, but generally we don't want to instruct a devotee unless we feel it will have a good effect. If we know that speaking to the devotee will not have a good effect, then why should we do it? And it's a could be a matter of our own false ego or anger. If we're not in a position to correct the devotee or instruct the devotee, we could approach someone who is in a position to correct or instruct the devotee and present the situation and see if that person will speak to the devotee. I mean, it really depends, you know, who the devotee is, what your relationship with the devotee is, what the magnitude of the cheating is. What the spiritual position of the devotee is. There are many variables. Yes.
Who stretch themselves out of the way to do devotional service much more than their bodies can take, their family life can take, and much, much more. And at the cost of falling ill or damaging their body or spoiling relationships in the family. So does this kind of devotional service really please Krishna?
She says that a devotee may extend himself or herself more than his body can take, and he might fall sick, or more than his family members or her family members can accept. So does this kind of devotional service please Krishna? Well, that is the question. Does it please Krishna or not? Sometimes we make a decision. I mean, every decision has its advantages and disadvantages. Sometimes, in life we always make decisions where we gain on one side and we lose on another side. So, as a devotee, ultimately we want to please Krishna, and it's a matter of degree. How much will it please Krishna if I do something that upsets someone in the family? How much will it disturb my service if the family is upset? You know, how much benefit will I get by doing this service even at the cost of my health? And then how much will my service be affected later if my health suffers? You know, if there's a good opportunity to preach to some people, and you stay up late to preach, and then the next day you're tired, but then again, if you get a good night's sleep the following night, and then the day after that, you're in good condition, well, you might consider it's worth it. It's worth making that sacrifice. The same thing with the family members. How upset are they going to be? One day, my sister invited me for dinner. I think it was just before I was leaving for India last year. And she really went out of her way to cook everything according to my diet. And she really tried to please me with everything she cooked. But I had assumed that my secretary would have informed her that it was a codicil. She knows very well what a codicil is. But my secretary didn't inform her. So she made this whole meal specially for me with all of her care and devotion, and it was not for a codicil. And my cousins were also invited. And it was very tense because, you know, she let me know how much effort she put into it and how much care she took. And I just really thought about it carefully, and I concluded that if I broke a codicil, of course I would have made it up the next day, but I concluded if I broke a codicil, I would be disturbed. And that would not be a good thing, even for the evening with the family. And I considered if I don't break a codicil, even though my sister will be upset temporarily, but ultimately it will be the better decision. So I praised her for all the effort she put into it, and I told her how beautiful all the preparations looked, and I was like feasting through my eyes at all the different colors and textures, and tried to make her feel good. And I could have, there were a couple of things. I had broccoli and, a few little things. And, but afterwards, my cousin said to me, "You passed the test." So sometimes you don't know how people will react. It really depends how big of a sacrifice you're being asked to make in terms of Krishna consciousness, and how much of a sacrifice in terms of family life. Like in that case, I thought it would have been a much bigger loss to break a codicil than to disappoint my sister by not eating the feast she prepared. I mean, ultimately, it may come to that point. Prabhupada, anyway, you know the story of Prabhupada and his wife. Sometimes it comes to that, but that's extreme. All right. Oh, yes.
Maharaj, you mentioned that we should chant and not be in the bodily platform. So how do we actually do that?
How do we chant and not be in the bodily platform? Well, we have to hear the philosophy. Every day at lunchtime, I listen to a lecture of Srila Prabhupada's. And I've been listening to the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Kshetra Kshetra Gya, the field of activities of the knower of the field. So I was thinking, maybe I should, because we're in the japa retreat, maybe I should shift to Prabhupada speaking on the sixth canto about Ajamil and the holy name. But the lecture on the 13th chapter was all about you're not the body, which is really the basis of offenseless chanting. So hearing and understanding, this is called sambandha gyan, that is a prerequisite. And you need to hear, read, hear, to be convinced. And various practices also help us realize that we're not the body. Srila Prabhupada said that deity worship helps you realize you're not the body. Now, so many practices will help you realize you're not the body. Well, there was a time when I was in Mauritius and there was no hot water. And it was really cold water. And so when that cold water was pouring on my body, I realized I'm not the body. So although performance of austerity per se is not part of our process, but through the performance of austerity, you can come to realize that you're not the body. But it shouldn't be austerity for the sake of austerity. It should be austerity in the line of service. So there was no hot water, and I had to get to Mangalarti, so... another example, so many examples, but often, especially in the early days when we were serving in India, when we had very little facility, when I was in a materially uncomfortable situation, I felt the closest to Srila Prabhupada, because the only reason I was where I was and doing what I was doing was for the sake of Srila Prabhupada's service. There's no question that I was there for the sake of sense gratification, because from the material point of view, it was a very difficult situation to be in. So, voluntarily accepting a miserable condition for the sake of service helps reaffirm that you are not the body. Yeah. And chanting, that's the main thing, Cheto Darpana Marjanam. Chanting cleanses the dirt from the mirror of the mind, and the dirt, the basis of the dirt is the conception that I'm the body. So offenseless chanting will remove that. We may not always chant offenselessly, we might, but whatever offenseless chanting we do will help cleanse that dirt. And as that dirt becomes cleansed, then we realize we're not the body. That was just the dirt that was covering the mirror of the mind. Then eventually, when the dust is cleansed, we can see who we are. We can look in the mirror and see who we really are. Eternal servant of Krishna. She says that service to the holy name includes giving the holy name to others, so it may be time to do Harinam Sankirtan, but at the same time there might be a class by an advanced devotee, and hearing the class will also inspire us in our service to the holy name, so which should we do? Well, we often have such situations where we have to choose between one service and another, all for the same purpose, ultimately to please Krishna. And, you know, we can pray to Krishna within the heart to enlighten us, or we can consult some other devotee, or we can reason it out with our intelligence what is more important. You know, one calculation could be, well, you know, I can go on Harinam any day, but it's very rare to hear from this devotee, so maybe I should hear from this devotee today and go on Harinam the next day and the next day and the next day. Or it could be that, you know, if you don't go on Harinam, the other devotees will be disappointed, and the advanced devotee will be pleased if you go on the Harinam. There's no right or wrong. When Srila Prabhupada revealed to us, or disclosed to us, that he might be leaving his body soon, so one of the disciples said that we probably should inform all the devotees, because they'll want to know that you might be leaving soon. Prabhupada said, yes, you can inform them. He said, they all may want to come to Vrindavan to be with you. Prabhupada said, yes, they can come. And then one devotee said, but there may be thousands. How could we accommodate them? He said, a Fogal Ashram is there. And then one devotee said, but there might be others who feel that they could serve you better and please you more if they stay where they are and distribute books rather than coming to Vrindavan to be with you. And Srila Prabhupada said that yes, then they can stay and they can distribute books. It's not that one is right and one is wrong, they're just different ways of working to the same goal of pleasing Krishna, pleasing Prabhupada. I mentioned Srila Prabhupada said that the continuous endeavor to chant without offense is the offenseless state. It's the effort to remove offenses. That's what constitutes the offenseless state. And the pure stage means there are no offenses. But the clearing stage, or the offenseless stage, is the stage in which we are making a continuous effort to avoid offenses, to remove offenses.
Because there may be some chance, because if we do 64 rounds in a day, there may be a chance out of that 64 rounds we can do a 16th rounds attentively. Out of 64 rounds, there can be a chance we can do 16th rounds attentively.
So? Even when you're not chanting, you can commit offenses. Inattention while chanting is one offense that you commit while you're chanting. But there are other offenses you commit when you're not chanting. So you have to be constantly vigilant not to commit offenses, whether you're chanting or not. All these sadhu-ninda, Shruti Shastra Nindanam, Guru Ravagya. These are offenses you commit when you're not chanting. So you have to be endeavoring to avoid offenses all the time. That's what constitutes the clearing stage or the offenseless stage of chanting. Of course, a lot of how we chant our rounds depends on how we conduct ourselves when we're not chanting. Yeah, so every aspect of our life should be such that it's favorable for our chanting. That is true. She's asking, is it all right to hear the sound of Srila Prabhupada chanting japa in one ear, because it helps her. Well, the real thing is to hear our own japa, but having Srila Prabhupada chanting japa with you can help I don't have any experience of what you described. I mean, I chant with Srila Prabhupada chanting japa in the background, and I find then I can hear my own chanting. I don't know what it would be like to hear Prabhupada chanting in one ear unless you chant in unison. Are you chanting like in time with his chanting, or you're just chanting? Well, if it helps you to hear your own japa, then I suppose it's all right. I don't have any experience with that. I can't even imagine it. But I guess if it helps you to hear your own japa, then it's all right. It's good.
I had a similar question. I chant also like this, and I chant at the same speed like Prabhupada for some rounds, and then I don't hear my sounds. I chant very slowly, but I chant Prabhupada's speaking at the same pace. So that should not be done. I should be hearing my own voice.
But when you chant with Srila Prabhupada, aren't you hearing your voice along with his voice?
No, Maharaj, because I'm chanting softly at the same pace as Prabhupada, but I'm hearing his only, because I'm soft on mine.
You know, it's a subtle question. I mean, ultimately, we're... the mantra's in the mind. But I heard that once Srila Prabhupada went into the temple room in Dallas and they were playing his japa tape loudly, and he said, why are you playing my japa tape? You should be listening to your japa, not mine. So... it's good what you describe, but I don't know. I don't know if it should count as part of your 16 rounds. Certainly no harm in it. Yeah, japa means we should hear our own voice. All right, so
what if one has a cold and he lost his voice? Well, it occurred to me last year, I lost my voice, so I decided to do japa and listen to that.
What do you do? When you lose your voice?
I put the CD on, like you're chanting and listening to you and moving on the beach.
Uh-huh. Well, what some devotees have done when they lose their voice, some people have, they lose their voice from time to time, it happens. Some of them record their own japa. So then when they lose their voice, they listen to their own voice. Yeah. All right. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada.
Jai. Jai.